All right, hey, what's up, Pine Lake family? Great to see you guys. My name is Mike. We hadn't had a chance to meet. I want to welcome all of our campuses all over the state of Mississippi, and those of you that might be joining us online from somewhere in the world. Super grateful for y'all. And it's always great to see you guys. I got to explain something, obviously. I teach at a lot of different churches, and most of them are growing type of churches, not because of me, but because of what God is doing. But with that comes some risk. And because I love to be in the lobby, I love to shake hands with people, I love to hug on people, but I don't know where y'all have been. And there's all kinds of new people coming. I don't know where you've been either. And wherever I go, it's like that. So I just determined from now on, this is going to be pretty much my attire for every weekend that I preach somewhere, because I just don't know. I don't want to catch stuff. Now, this would be ridiculous, right? Like, right? Yeah, right. So if we're not careful, and now I want to say a word to some of you that have to wear something like this on a daily basis. Some of you are doing hazmat stuff or infectious diseases. You're working in an operating room, or maybe you're just painting stuff and you have to wear this all the time. So shout out to you that have to do this. But for a guy like me to wear something like this would be just like really ridiculous. But here's what I'm discovering is that I may not wear something like all this stuff, but in my heart, and this might be true of you as well, just be honest, if we're not careful, we start to group certain people into the category of the untouchables. You know, I'm talking about, you know, those people. My son Derek is a worship leader, and just a incredible guys. He owns his own construction business, and he's a great husband and great dad. He's one of my very best friends. And most people, if you ask him to describe Derek, is, oh man, he's just a cool guy. He's just a man of few words. That's not the way he was when he was a kid. When he was a kid, he never shut up. Anybody else have a kid like that? And you never knew what he was going to say to anybody. So you're always a little scared of what he might say. It was just, he was that guy. I remember a time he was in the first grade. He came home, he's riding a school bus. He goes, Mom and Dad, there are these kids that sit on the bus next to me, and they don't smell very good. And Debbie goes, Derek, you don't say anything, do you? He goes, no, Mom, I just sit there and hold my nose. He's come a long way since then. And you know what? I would like to say so have I, because both of us have learned the way that Jesus moved among people, that most people you would keep a distance from. I want to show you a story today. It's probably in my top 10 in the entire Bible. It's found in the book of Luke, which is the third book in the New Testament section of the Bible. So if you got a Bible, you can turn to Luke chapter 5. You got an app that you use, that'd be cool too. We got to put it on the screens as well. We can all kind of track along together. So let's just jump in. Luke chapter 5 verse 12 says this, while Jesus was in one of the towns, a man came along who was covered with leprosy. Now, only in Luke's account is it detailed covered with leprosy or full of leprosy. Luke was a doctor, and he uses the medical term for a very advanced case of leprosy. When the man saw Jesus, he fell with his face to the ground and begged him, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Now, I think it's kind of cool how this guy acknowledges Jesus' authority right up front, calls him Lord. He says, Lord, I believe you can do anything. Now, you may not heal me in the way that I thought you might. You might not do it right away. But you know what? I want to tell you, you could. I believe you could if you wanted to. It reminds me how the founders of AA wrote about their experience. They wrote, we found that God could and would if he were sought. We found that God could and would if he were sought. And so many of us have found that to be absolutely true in our own lives. And if that is true, which millions of addicts can attest to, then isn't it also true that God can't and won't if he's not? This guy made the first move. He sought out Jesus saying, I really believe you could. I just want to know if you would. Verse 13, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. The word used here for touch is the word hapto, which means to fasten onto. So this is not some like big dramatic smack in the forehead where the guy falls backwards and some dramatic show with the crescendoing music. It's just a tender hold, a touch. It had been so long since anybody had fastened onto this guy. So Jesus fastens onto him and says, "I'm willing. Be clean." And catch this. Immediately, the leprosy left him. What? You've probably seen those commercials for like, I think it's plaque psoriasis, where you got people wearing sleeveless blouses and some guy wearing a Speedo that should not be wearing a Speedo. In fact, no guy needs to be wearing a Speedo. Let's just get that clear right now. And then the announcer comes on and says, "Many people taking Otezla found that their skin got noticeably clearer within the first 6 months of treatment." And immediately, the leprosy left him. Verse 14, then Jesus ordered him, "Don't tell anybody, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." You see, people would know that this guy had been a leper and would be very slow to accept him back. But if the priest had inspected him and accepted his offering, it would validate this man in the eyes of the people. Plus, it would show that Jesus respected the law. And so Jesus instructs the guy, "Don't tell anybody about this." Verse 15, yet the news about him spread all the more. Think the guy might have talked? So that crowds of people came to hear him and to be healed of their sicknesses. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and he prayed. Now I want to go back and unpack it just a little bit. I want to look at this disease called leprosy. This was not acne. This was not alopecia. This was not a rash or even psoriasis. Leprosy in the first century meant that you had all kinds of lethargy in your body and pain in every single joint. You had discolored patches of skin all over your body, ulcerated sores all over your face as your face literally began to fall off. There was an intense smell about you. There was the ulcerating of the vocal cords. There was a loss of sensation in all of your extremities. It was a terrible, horrible, contagious skin disease that eventually infected the entire body. Dr. Paul Brand was a leading researcher on leprosy, died about 20 years ago now, super compassionate Christian man, brilliant guy who did all kinds of research on leprosy treatment in underdeveloped parts of the world. He said that the greatest damage that he saw physically from leprosy came from that loss of sensation. Now, I don't want to be graphic here, but just so you know what we're dealing with. As these impoverished homeless lepers would sleep, rats would come and maybe gnaw off the end of a finger because the lepers felt no sensation. They could just sleep right through it. And leprosy was not just considered a physical disease. It also carried a social stigma. Lepers were not just physically quarantined, they were spiritually quarantined. This disease was seen to be a curse from God that announced to the rest of the world, this person is unclean from the inside out, as well as the outside in. And not only were they called unclean, they were instructed to shout that word about themselves whenever they got close to crowds. But they seldom got close to crowds because they were quarantined to colonies of like-inflicted people. When they received the news that leprosy had invaded their bodies, they were immediately taken out of their homes. They lost their spouse. They lost their kids. They lost their job. They lost their reputation, their position, their hands, their face, eventually their lives. They carried a disease and a stigma that isolated them socially, physically, and spiritually. They saw themselves and they were seen as the untouchables. Mother Teresa, who, like Dr. Brand, also worked with leprosy in the streets of Calcutta, India, she once said, "We have drugs for people with diseases like leprosy, but the drugs do not treat the main problem, the disease of being unwanted." Feels awful to be unwanted, doesn't it? Feels horrible to feel like you are untouchable. It just sucks the joy out of your life, doesn't it? And that's the way lepers felt in Jesus' day. They were absolutely hopeless. Can you imagine what it's like to be strictly forced to shout unclean about yourself when you walk down the road so that people can avoid you, to walk through your life and see your former neighbors working, to hear your former buddies laughing, to see your kids out there playing and no longer get to be a part of any of it, to be so alive but feel so dead. Sue Monk Kidd writes, "It's anguish to come to that place in life where you know all the words, but none of the music." And that's the way it must have been for this guy. I mean, you wonder how long it had been since anybody had touched him. I mean, when was the last time he was hugged by a child? When was the last time he was kissed by his wife? When was the last time he had felt the embrace of a friend? When was the last time he'd even been bumped into? The religious leaders, the Pharisees, they taught that if you touched an unclean person, then you would become defiled. You would become just like them, unclean. So people were to avoid all lepers, and all lepers were to avoid all people, especially religious rabbis. In fact, a strict rule-keeping rabbi was the last person most people wanted to see. They knew if a leper got close to a rabbi, they could get busted for breaking the law. So rabbis prided themselves in being so holy, so close to God, that they were unapproachable to any of the marginalized people of the day, especially lepers. And the great irony is, the only rabbi this leper could approach was God himself. Jesus was the most approachable human being who ever walked this planet. It's well documented how prostitutes and tax collectors and little kids and brilliant scholars and lawyers and widows and uneducated fishermen would hang out with him. It didn't matter to him. Jesus was amazingly approachable, and that reputation followed him everywhere he went. So this leper, he takes a risk and he approaches Jesus. He knew the law. And he makes no attempt to touch Jesus, but he had seen something or heard something about this rabbi that made him feel at least comfortable enough to approach him. And this man, feeling untouchable, unworthy, and unclean, falls on his face in the dirt. And in spite of the law of the Pharisees, in spite of this man's contagious condition, in spite of the social implications, it says this in Mark's account, adds, filled with compassion. Filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I'm willing, be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him. What's cool to me is that Jesus knew, even before this man needed to be healed, this man needed to be touched. I mean, think about it. Jesus could have done like drive-through healings if he wanted to. He could have stayed in one isolated spot. "May I take your order? Thank you. Please pull the next window, please." He could have set up like a headquarters and sent out like a healing vibe over a 1,000-mile radius. He could have done social media posts. "Want to be healed? Click here." But he knew the power of a touch. I love what Max Lucado writes from the perspective of this leper. He says, "I saw him, and before he spoke, I knew that he cared. Somehow I knew he hated this disease as much, no more, than I hate it. My rage became trust. My anger became hope. From behind a rock, I watched him descend a hill. I waited until he was only paces from me, and then I stepped out." "Unclean," someone shouted. "I don't blame him. I was a huddled mass of death, but I scarcely heard them. I scarcely saw them in their panic. I'd seen 1,000 times. His compassion, however, I had never beheld. Everyone stepped back except for him. He stepped toward me. I said, 'Lord, you can heal me if you will.' Had he healed me with a word, I would have been thrilled. Had he cured me with a prayer, I would have rejoiced. But he touched me." Imagine that. Unworthy of the touch of a man, yet worthy of the touch of God. Y'all know that God wired us up to be touched, right? I mean, it's well documented that human beings need to experience touch. Now, we all know studies also show that people who laugh a lot, they tend to live longer. Studies also show that people who experience meaningful touch on a regular basis, they also have a longer life expectancy than those who don't. My wife, Debbie, is a cuddler and a laugher. if the studies are true, she's going to live to be like 186. She's going to be around a long time. I heard about this kind of a non-affectionate guy up in, I think it was Oxford, I think it may be Starkville, who was out on a date with his wife trying to rekindle some romance, and she stepped off the curb and she broke her leg. He calls 911 and says, "Hey, we need an ambulance. My wife broke her leg." He said, "Where are you, sir?" He said, "Eucalyptus Street." They said, "Can you spell that?" He goes, "Why don't I just drag her over to Oak and y'all pick her up there?" Now, I'm convinced we can do better than that, right? Now, I'm not saying we all have to be like touchy-feely type of people, but gang, everybody needs to be touched in some way. Y'all ever go to those little antique shops with figurines and stuff? These places drive me nuts. I'm just being honest with you. Something, you can ask Debbie, something inside of me snaps when I go in these places. I just want to grab a baseball bat and start swinging and clearing shelves. I just do. I gotta get out of there. Because everywhere you walk in, there's little signs. Don't touch. Don't touch. Don't touch. Don't touch. You break it, you bought it. Every day, you and I brush up against people of incredible worth, people who are already broken. And God has attached a high price tag to everybody that reads, "This person is worth the price of my son." And God goes around putting little labels, "Please touch, please touch, please touch, please touch." I'm telling you, today, there will be someone in your world that will be waiting for somebody just to touch them. Will you? Will you extend a hand or a fist bump or an arm around the shoulder or a warm embrace or just an offer of help or just an acknowledgement that they're even there? John Ortberg writes, "In a contagious world, we learn to keep our distance. If we get too close to those who are suffering, we might get infected with their pain. It may not be convenient or comfortable, but only when you get close enough to catch their hurt will they be close enough to catch your love." Again, I love how the leper approached Jesus by faith. He says, I know you can do this. I know that you have the power. I just didn't know if you were that kind of God. And Jesus reached out and touched the man, not only to heal the man, but to announce to the whole world, God is that kind of God. He wants to be close. I know this verse has meant a lot to many of you from Psalm 34, which says, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted, and he rescues those who are crushed in spirit." And you know why God is so effective with the brokenhearted and those who've been crushed in spirit? Because he's close. He is that kind of God. You know, Jesus did miracles, lots and lots of miracles. In fact, in the Gospel of John, John says, I didn't have room to write down all the amazing things I saw Jesus do. It'd take a library bigger than the whole world to put all the stuff about what I saw him do. Jesus did lots and lots of miracles. And every time Jesus did a miracle, he wasn't trying to build a crowd. He wasn't trying to show off. He wasn't trying to go viral. In fact, he even tells this guy and other people at other times, "Please just keep this quiet." Because he knew that chaos could occur and tension and opposition could mount with the constantly scheming religious leaders. But he healed people and he touched people because he could and he wanted to. Here's the whole deal, though. Healing their body was not the end goal. And he didn't choose to heal everyone. And if physical healing was the end goal, then none of them would have eventually died. But they all eventually died. Even his buddy Lazarus, he died twice. Jesus' response to suffering people and to the untouchables was to provide an up-close and personal glimpse into the heart of God. I like what Philip Yancey writes. "By no means did Jesus eliminate all suffering. He healed only a few in one small patch of the globe. But he did answer the question of whether God cares. Regardless of how the world treats them, the poor and the sick have assurance because of Jesus that God knows no undesirables." Gang, there's hope for everyone. What a feeling to know that you, in your condition, are wanted, that you are not undesirable. You're not unwanted. You're not unclean. You're not untouchable. And man, when you realize that, it is hard to keep that quiet. You see, nobody, like never, ever, ever touched a leper. If you touched one, you got infected. But when Jesus touched the leper, he did not infect Jesus with his disease. Jesus infected him with his life and his hope and his joy. And as a result, this guy was really contagious now. Remember how Jesus told him, let's keep this under wraps. Let's don't tell anybody about this. Because his ministry didn't need any more attention, hassle, or crowds. But the guy simply could not keep it quiet. It says over in Mark's account, instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere. I mean, come on. Can you blame this guy? How do you keep something like that under wraps? How do you keep that? I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind, but now I see. How do you keep that under wraps? How do you keep it under wraps that you were once rejected, but now you are accepted? How do you keep that experience quiet? You just can't. Gang, something that happens like that to you, you want to explode with gratitude. It's hard to shut up about it. You know, Pine Lake is a growing church, and I think one of the main reasons is we just can't keep quiet about how the love of God has changed us and is continually changing us. I'm telling you, you may be sitting in a row right now with a family that just a few years ago was absolutely falling apart, but they allowed God to get close, and he touched them. You may be sitting really close to somebody today who was adrift in a deep, deep sea of depression and grief, but God reached down and touched them and pulled them out. On the way into church today, I heard that song by Jelly Roll and Lainey Wilson, I'm a Lost Cause. Baby, don't waste your time on me. I'm so damaged beyond repair. I'm telling you, you may be a few seats away from somebody that would tell you today that's an absolute lie. Because they wrestled big time with alcoholism, with drug addiction, eating disorder. They felt beyond repair. But like that leper, they said, Lord, I'm willing. You willing? And they found out that God could and he would if he were sought. And they started seeking his help. And they got into a recovery group and he began to transform their lives. You're in a room right now with people who are terminally ill. But they're finding a deeper kind of healing. An unexplainable peace and strength to move through every day because the God who draws close has given them an eternal hope, and that hope will not disappoint. You're in the same room with people who used to have a horrible reputation, those with a wild sexual past, those who did some prison time, those who never thought forgiveness was possible for a person like them. They found out they were dead wrong about the kind of God God is, and they felt the life-giving touch of Jesus Christ. I'm telling you, it's hard to keep that quiet. Once you get infected by Jesus' healing touch, you move through your school, through your workplace, through your neighborhood, your own home, with a contagious joy that just flows from a deep place of gratitude. I'm not talking about becoming an obnoxious religious person, but rather just moving through your day with an attractive peace and confidence and a humble heart that's full of compassion that touches those around you. When Jesus Christ has changed your life, when he has infected you, it's hard to keep it quiet. It's hard not to want to touch other people with the same kind of love that you've been given. I met Eddie after church one weekend. He came with his brother asking for prayer. It was only his third time in a church in his entire life. He wasn't sure he believed any of it. His brother and sister-in-law have been inviting him to our church for quite a while. He would always, you know, stiff arm him, going, nah, that's not for me. Pretty self-centered guy and chasing a lot of stuff and a lot of money to be able to chase a lot of stuff. But something had changed in his life. He had been diagnosed with cancer and there wasn't much hope. So he finally came with them to church and God started softening his heart. He reluctantly came up front to pray with me and we talked for quite a while. Actually, thinking back, we hit it off like right away. There was a connection. I mean, he felt like an old friend, like immediately. And I told him, I said, Jesus is a healer, man. And even though he doesn't always choose to heal people physically, there's a deeper healing that only he can give. And I told him how in my life, he had healed me from an addiction to self and approval. And I told him that Jesus had replaced my greed with gratitude. He'd replaced my envy with contentment. He'd taken away my anxiety and given me peace. And so we stood there and we prayed. We huddled up with his brother and we prayed and we stayed in contact. A few weeks later, his brother texted me and asked if we could meet for lunch. And I'll never forget it. We were sitting at a round table. I remember I was sitting here and Eddie was sitting right across from me. And he gets real choked up. He says, I want to give you an update on my cancer situation. He said, the doctors told me he'd never seen this before. My cancer's completely gone. And I remember sitting there across from him and say, I don't know why I said that. I just think the Holy Spirit put it in my mouth. This just came out of my mouth. I went, oh man, what are you going to do with a gift like that? He went, I don't know, man. I never thought about that. Well, he took those words to heart. And he gave his life to Jesus, and I got to baptize him. He was already a likable guy, but I'm telling you, this dude turned into a love machine. And he began to walk with humility, started asking forgiveness from friends and family members that he'd hurt along the way, became good friends with his ex-wife and her husband. Started being the kind of dad that his girls had always needed him to be. It was like that, you know, that remember that old Tim McGraw song, Live Like You Were Dying, except he wasn't skydiving and Rocky Mountain climbing and riding a bull named Fu Manchu. He started serving and started giving himself away. He got infected by the touch of Jesus, and he became this super generous guy who helped a ton of people. He was bringing coworkers and clients and his girls to church with him every single week. He was serving. I mean, he was a light, just a light. Just short of a year later, the cancer came back. This time it came back with a vengeance, and he lasted only a month or so. And I can still remember standing at his bedside, and while he was out, I was guessing he could still hear me. So I kept talking to him and told him how honored I was to know him and so proud of the way he let Jesus change his life. First dude I ever kissed on the forehead. Kissed him on the forehead, told him, I'll see you soon, man. Days later, I got to do the funeral, rather the celebration of life service. It was incredible. I couldn't believe how many people showed up for this thing. I mean, chapel probably held 1,500 people. There wasn't a seat in there, and people stood all the way along the sides and all the way across the back. People stood out in the lobby and stuff. So many people got up and told stories of the way that Eddie had touched their lives, and we cried and we laughed and we worshiped God. It was so moving. I'll never forget that funeral service. He even had his brother make some DVDs of a message that I had preached that meant a lot to him, and everybody there got one on the way out. He wanted them to know hope too. Eddie just took that gift of life, that gift of healing, and he let Jesus heal him in a place that really matters. And then he began to touch people with the same kind of love he had received from Jesus. Today, if you need healing for anything in your life, like anything going on in your life, we have people that would love to pray with you and for you. All of our campuses, just like every week, we'll have people down front. I'm just telling you, Jesus wants to touch you where it really matters today. I've had this quote from Ian Watson hanging over my office desk for many years now. This is a good reminder to me. We live on a contaminated planet. It is contaminated on every level. It should have been quarantined from heaven. No reasonable God would go near it with a 10-foot pole. But Jesus is no reasonable God. He became a human being and took on your uncleanness and mine. But instead of the world infecting him, he infected the world. And with his immaculate infection, it's still spreading. And I just want to encourage us all today, when we leave this place, or even before we leave this place, there will be people waiting for somebody to touch them. So what do you say we take off the safety glasses? And we start to see people with new eyes. We look at people the way Jesus looked at people. And we be sensitive to the people that God puts in our path this week. Let's continue to take off the gloves and the suit, and let's touch the world with the healing love of Jesus Christ. Father, thank you for the way you've touched our lives. So grateful for the healing touch of Jesus in my own life. God, I think of all the people here that you have touched in amazing ways. I thank you for the stories that are represented, all the campuses of Pine Lake, even people that watch online all the time. God, thank you for the way you've touched us in ways that no one else could. Thank you for reaching deep inside of us and healing stuff that really needed a touch. And Father, I pray today for everyone to experience that, for everybody to do what that leper did and say, I know you can. I just wondered if you would. And they would experience that you could and you would if you were sought. So God, I pray for somebody to seek you out today and say, God, I surrender to your authority. I need your healing touch in my life. And then do whatever it takes to cooperate with that healing touch. Father, thank you so much for the way Jesus moved among all of us. He took our uncleanness, made us clean. Forever grateful for that. I pray all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.